after I'd implemented these techniques, like the meditation, the sauna, the visualization, all these different things, everything became less stressful. And instead of going in fast forward mode, it felt more like I was in slow motion.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Mad Happy Podcast. This is episode 79. We are joined by Alex Ferreira, who is a professional skier, a multiple-time Olympian participant, a 10-time X Games participant, Aspen local, friend of the brand. We got connected to Alex a couple years ago through Columbia, and we are releasing our second drop with them this week, which was really, really amazing to work on. Truly one of my favorite collabs that we've done to date. You know, I think Columbia as an institution in the sportswear world and outerwear world is really just top of the line, and I think that they have such a rich heritage and legacy of a brand, and it was such an honor to be able to work with them. And Alex is one of the athletes who they sponsor and who rides for them, so we kind of got caught up in the last couple years that we've been working together, and we've hung out a few times that we've been in Aspen, and he's just been an awesome friend of the brand, skiing our skis that we made last year. So we wanted to bring you guys this conversation to celebrate the second release with Columbia. Was really great to talk to Alex on a more formal level. I think any athlete who competes at that high of a level obviously has their fair share of mental health hurdles and challenges that they really have to overcome to, you know, get in the mindset to be able to perform in front of hundreds of thousands, if not even millions of people, when you talk about the Winter Olympics. And I think he was, you know, so much more mindful and in tune with his mental health, and I was really expecting, you know, really having practices that he does every single day that you guys will hear about, but was really awesome. I was born in Aspen, he was born in Aspen. You know, obviously I didn't become the professional skier that he did, but definitely felt a little bit of a kindred spirit energy, and was just always great to talk to someone who loves skiing, as it's a huge hobby of mine as well. Hope you guys have been enjoying the Columbia rollout, and today's actually the day of the drop, exclusive on Instagram. So please check out our Instagram and go there to purchase the collection. That's the only place that it's available. So make sure you tap in on IG shop. And yeah, there's some really, really great product in there that we work super hard on. Really our most like technical winter gear to date. Have a really great set of top and bottom for like ski and snowboard pants if you actually are looking for on mountain apparel. Otherwise, there's some really great lifestyle products, puffer jackets, other winter pants, some really great quarter zips and fleeces, and Sherpas in there that were so fun and awesome to make, and a really great wide range of accessories as well. So really, really proud of that collection. Huge shout out to Columbia and to our entire team internally here, who helped make it happen. And big thank you to Alex for coming on the show and for just being a friend of the brand and a huge mental health advocate. So the Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Alex Ferreira. What are your days looking like right now? Are you training? What are you gearing up for these days?
I mean, currently it's, yeah, training, and I'm in the studio, the editing studio, quite a bit lately. So I'll go to training in the morning and then the editing studio in the late afternoon into the evening.
Nice. And what's the next big competition coming up?
Yeah, I guess our next big competition will be Copper Grand Prix, and it'll be December 16th or the 17th in Copper, Colorado.
Nice. What is a typical sort of day of training look like for you, and will preparation for the Copper Grand Prix sort of be different than an X Games preparation or Olympic, or is your routine sort of all the same?
So I wake up, I'll give you mega specific. I wake up around 5:50 and I'll read from 6 until 6:30. Currently reading a book on how they made The Office, and then I'll meditate for 10 minutes right after that, eat some oatmeal with blueberries, straight to the gym at 7:15. I'll be at the gym until 8:15, and then take 5 minute break, and then 30 minutes jumping on the trampoline, going through my runs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then I'll go to the hot tub for a recovery session, and I'll do my affirmations, tell myself I am going to be the 2023 world champion or whatever contest it is, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'll jump in the steam room and I'll stretch for 20 minutes. And then I will do a visualization of my runs all the way through. Seeing myself stepping on top of the podium, seeing myself lifting my hands up, whatever it is, and the whole run itself. And then I'll go home and I'll watch video for 20 minutes. And I'll usually watch the best guys and best girls in the world. Nico Porteous, he's probably the best half pipe skier in the world right now. So I watch a ton of his video. And then, yeah. And then I'm pretty much done right around 10:30. So training is finished for the day. I come down to Carbondale. I get in the editing studio. And currently we've been working on a bunch of Hans 3 stuff. So I've been our audio engineer. I'm just cutting up audio all day, every day. And it's been really fun. But going into this kind of season comparatively to an Olympic season or other events like that, I would say this season's a bit more relaxed because it's right after an Olympic year.
Mm.
And while there will be a lot of people, newcomers, trying to break through and make their stardom or whatever it is, there's time to relax a bit, I guess I could say.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a little bit older. So I'm very excited for the season, but I'm not as stressed as for an Olympic season, I guess I would put it.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. I mean, I love so much of your preparation. I feel like are things that we talk about on the show and as a brand, and really our mental health exercises and total coping mechanisms when you break it down. And I'm curious for you, you know, when did you start implementing some of these things like meditation and affirmations and these sort of things?
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess it kind of came inadvertently from one of my best friends, Connor Ezrick. It happened in numerous different ways, but yeah, Connor and I were sitting by the pool and it was in the summer of 2017. We're just enjoying a nice summer's day. And he looked over at me and he casually said something, said like, victory lies within preparation. And I latched on to those words as if Bible. I lived my life by that mantra basically.
Yeah.
And myself every day is, whatever I was doing in front of me, is this going to help me win or is this not going to help me win? And everything that said this is going to help me win, I did. And everything that I didn't think was going to help, I didn't do. It was just kind of, that had happened. And then another friend, Max Buter, recommended a sports psychologist. I started going to the sports psychologist. I learned how to visualize properly. And then I was going to the gym 5 days a week, trampoline 5 days a week, physical therapy twice a week, sports psych twice a week. I was saunaing every day. I was doing the hot tub. I was taking it so seriously because I wanted to be looked at seriously. And then from all of that, it became less scary. I was still nervous before the events, but it became less scary and more prepared. And I just started winning. Like the stars seem to have just aligned properly all in those moments. And yeah, it changed my life completely. There's no question.
That's amazing. Could you speak a little bit to, I guess, before you started doing those things, you say it was less scary once they were implemented. Were you feeling a lot more sort of fears or anxiety when competing before that? And were you sort of looking for different ways to support your mental game?
Absolutely. I think I remember going into a lot of competitions, not knowing exactly what my run was going to be, not knowing whether I could land this trick consistently. I was just kind of a little lost.
Yeah.
And after I'd implemented these techniques, like the meditation, the sauna, the visualization, all these different things, everything became less stressful. And instead of going in fast forward mode, it felt more like I was in slow motion.
Mm.
And when I was in slow motion, I was able to breathe and I was able to think a little bit during the runs and actually just be there, be fully there in the moment. And once I could do that, then it felt, I'd never done so well competing before. I think I podiumed at every event.
Wow.
In the season. And then I won the Crystal Globe, which is the overall consistency, whoever does the best overall during that season, whoever has the rank. And I won it during the Olympic season. And it just, it made so much sense after all of that. I look back at early on in my career and I can't believe I wasn't doing that. I wish I knew what I know now, you know, one of those situations.
No, 100%. Do you feel like it's during a run for you, are you more sort of like blacked out and just like subconscious is taking over? And then now you're being more sort of like present and actually thinking and feeling during the run? Like, is that sort of the shift that happened?
Yeah. And it goes back and forth too, but I'm still more in control.
Yeah.
Comparatively than before. So sometimes I'll be in the run and I'll be thinking to myself, a good example is during the Olympics, my first run, I always listen to music and my AirPods cut out in the middle of the run. I've never had it happen before, but it just happens to be on the day of the Olympic final and I'm stressing out mid-run. I remember, like, holy shit, my music is out. You need to focus in. I remember saying that to myself middle of the run. Focus in, Chow. That's what they call it. My nickname is. And I said that to myself and I was so in the moment and I was so freaked out that I was almost more focused, right?
Mm.
So not this past Olympics, but the Olympics before that, I remember I put my music in as loud as I could go and I dropped in and then I remember landing the run.
Right.
That's it.
Nothing.
And it's just this flow state and I had no idea what happened.
That's crazy, man.
So it can go back and forth. I think I've experienced both.
Yeah. Do you feel like the pressure that you have felt throughout your career has reduced once you've implemented some of these mental health practices?
No question. Absolutely not. With not one iota of doubt.
Yeah.
I would do all of these different things even if I wasn't skiing, is how I like to put it. I would still go to the gym. I would still visualize myself in whatever job I'm doing the best I possibly could do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would still be in the steam room. I would still say my affirmations. They would just be different, right? I think it's now it's consumed me completely. It's no more just for skiing. It's for Alex.
Yeah, I think that's such a cool clarification to make, because I think even someone listening or, you know, we see these superstar mega athletes that might be so hard to relate to on paper. Like, my schedule doesn't look like that, but, you know, in a way we are sort of all preparing for our own, you know, game or competition of life every single day. And like these sort of things that you're talking about can really go a long way, whether you, you know, are trying to be an astronaut or a teacher or an athlete, like any of these things. Like, we all strive to accomplish our goals and have ambitions, and these visualization techniques or sort of mindfulness exercises are really just as beneficial regardless of what we're doing.
1,000%. I mean, you're in the office every day, you're looking at different garments, their textures.
Yeah.
Oh, is this work? Is this color? Do we like it? Is this going to sell? How much for? I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to get my skis ground to this base level. I need the edges to feel just like this. I want to look like that.
Yeah.
I want my heels to be under my helmet. You know, it's the same thing. It's just in a different avenue.
Yeah, 100%. I want to talk about sort of winning and losing. You know, I think obviously what the Mad Happy is built on this assumption of, like, you know, not every day is going to be great. We're going to have sad days and we're going to go through hard times in life. And that's an inevitable part of it. And let's not act like it's not going to happen, right? And I think for athletes, obviously, losing is a part of the game, right? It's nothing that people try to do, but obviously it's not realistic to say that we'll never lose or never have to deal with failure in that regard. I'm wondering, for you, what is your relationship like with loss and failure? And, like, how can you work on not getting your mental health, you know, so tied up into what happens during these runs and, like, be able to give yourself a consistent baseline? How has your relationship with that been?
Well, I'd say I'm definitely better at it now than I was when I was a little bit younger. I think when I was younger, I would throw tantrums probably.
Yeah.
And more so when I lose, I got this from Jeremy Bloom in his book. Do you know who Jeremy Bloom is? He's a professional.
No, I don't.
He was a professional mogul skier, and then he was a CU buff, and then he played in the NFL, I think, 2 seasons.
Wow.
But he's an legend.
That's sick, man.
It's definitely someone I look up to, but I got it from him in his book. He was picked to win the Olympics twice, and I think he got 4th and 5th.
Mm.
And he said he would allow himself, after every major loss, 48 hours to deal with all the emotions, act crazy, whatever, be himself in closed doors. But then after the 48 hours is up, he would say, okay, I am getting up today and I'm letting go of that. And I think I give myself less time. I give myself 24 hours. So if I lose, I'll be super pissed. I will be angry. I will be upset. I will be mad. You don't want to be around me. I don't want to be around me.
Yeah.
But when I lose, I also learn the most about why I lost and what I can do better. So it really isn't a lot of, it's not losing really. It's kind of more so winning and then learning.
Mm.
And when I win, I could tell you it's the best feeling in the entire world, pure jubilation, pure ecstasy. But I surely do not learn as much from when I win.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a great point, and obviously goes back to what we're saying in terms of the comparisons to just life as a whole. Is there so much value in a loss? There's so much value in, you know, times where we might be feeling a little bit depressed or a little bit sad, of like really taking inventory, going back over the steps, right? Where could we have done better? How can we do better next time? And like, you know, when I thought of the word Mad Happy, I was really depressed and I was in a super low point in my life. And through that came this idea and this sort of creative expression, which now has, you know, turned into a brand that we're going on for 5+ years. So I think it's really awesome to hear how you've been able to find the value in the losses. Cause otherwise, like, you know, they're going to happen. And if you don't really see how they can benefit us, then you're just going to sulk, and there'll probably be a lot more losses in their future than if you really want to look at them, analyze them, and kind of, you know, reflect on them, if you will.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying about Mad Happy is you care so much about it, right?
Yeah.
And I care so much about skiing.
Yeah.
And without yin, there is no yang, right? So you do have to feel the bad in order to really feel the good.
Yeah, 100%, man. Do you, what, you started skiing, what, at like 2, 3, 4 years old?
Yeah, my parents got me started skiing when I was 3.
Yeah, so do you even remember, like, you know, choosing to ski or, like, falling in love with the game? Or, like, has it just always been your life and your identity, do you feel?
No, I remember when my parents first started taking me, I remember going on crazy tantrums. I hate skiing, losing my mind, throwing my skis in the ground. Young, 4, 5, 6 years old, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I think where it turned was I was right around 10, maybe 8 years old. We were building a little ski jump in the back of the ski club.
Mm-hmm.
Where my best friends today in the backyard. They were doing 360s and I couldn't land this 360. And all of a sudden the coaches are coming out and say, hey guys, your parents are here. You got to go home. And I said, one more. I got to get up there. I got to land this thing. And I went and I landed this 360. And I remember right then and there, 10 years old, this is exactly what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. It was so poignant. I just couldn't. Yeah.
That's such a powerful moment. I feel like, especially for such a young kid at that time to really just know and feel it.
I just knew. And I was the worst kid on the team. I had twice as hard just to get half as much. I remember I just freaking loved it.
Yeah. So that was like a local club team almost?
Yeah, they have the Aspen Valley Ski and Snowboard Club team. And, you know, our parents all signed us up for weekend training and whatever it was, and little competitions and stuff like that.
Nice. And then from then, after you're 10 years old, I guess, you fully commit? Like, what does that look like at that age to really go all in?
It was early at its time.
Yeah.
Skiing was big. There was guys like Simon Dumont and Tanner Hall. You know, race academies had started, but freestyle academies were kind of just starting, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents didn't take it super seriously, as in you have to go to a ski academy. They were just, okay, we're going to sign you up for the ski club and ski if you'd like to, but we're very hands off. Have fun, kind of. And I think that's what it led to the success, honestly. I met my best friends there. I think 2 out of 5 of us ended up going professional.
Wow.
Like I was saying earlier, the stars really did just align. We had the most amazing coaches. We had such good staff. We had people who really cared. It was interesting. It wasn't like just signing up for normal sports. I mean, it was, but
yeah,
it was deeper than that in a weird way.
Yeah, I feel like it's, I've never even thought of this before, but maybe since the sport isn't as lucrative as like basketball or football, right? It is more authentic. And like the people who are doing this are doing it because they love it. They're not seeing like a $100 million opportunity with a 15-year-old kid. It's like there actually is the authenticity and the love of the game to like want to work with these athletes and these families and like be the best that we can be.
Completely. I think it was just a strong sense of community. It was a place where we could go and have fun and learn. And that just consumed our whole lives. It became skiing, skiing, skiing. And then the rest is it.
Yeah. When did you officially turn pro?
I officially turned pro, I think, when I was 18. And everyone considers turning pro differently. But when I was 18, I had got invited to my first X Games. And the X Games is basically our Super Bowl of skiing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had started to get paid that year. And then I had maybe one or two professional podium finishes that year.
Nice. And what was that like? I mean, especially growing up in Aspen, obviously X Games is kind of in your backyard there. For that to sort of be the pinnacle of the sport as well, I can imagine that was a pretty, pretty surreal moment for you.
It was unreal. I was senior year of high school. All my classmates, they said, hey, we're taking the day off. We're using senior ditch day to go watch Alex. And they did. It was so cool. They're still my best friends and my friends to this day. I remember the whole class showed up and I ended up falling both runs in qualification. That, you know, nobody, it was all just love and support. Like, hey, you're going to come back and you're going to do well next year.
Yeah.
And then I came back next year and I got third. And then my first podium finish. And then second the year after that. And then first 4 years after that. And it just, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's really incredible. Is there a specific X Games memory that sort of really stands out to you? Obviously, the first place finish is very special, but looking back, what now? You've done it. You've competed there like 9, 10 times, right?
Yeah, you're right. 9, 10 times. Yeah, there's so many memories, but I think the best one was I was 19 years old. It was my first time getting bronze at X Games.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was similar to the first time I'd gone when I'd fell both runs. All of my friends flew into town because at this time we're going to college now.
Yeah.
All my friends flew in. My buddy Connor Azrick, he throws the biggest house party I've ever been to. So I get there and all my friends, we go up there. We have such a good time. We're partying all night. And I don't know, it's those moments that I could share not only the success in skiing, but just, I don't know. I guess it was kind of like all my hard work had paid off a little bit. I caught my first break and I could share with friends and family members and everyone was on the same wavelength and the same frequency.
Yeah, that's special. How do you feel like you've seen the game sort of evolve in the last decade? Obviously, X Games has grown exponentially in terms of popularity, you know, the rise of snowboarding and popularity, skiing obviously becoming much more visible. What are the biggest things that you've really noticed like in the last 10 plus years in terms of just the reach of the sport?
I think with social media, everything, all sports, but our sport included, has grown exponentially. You can get anything you want and see whatever you want at any moment in time. So I think that has grown it, but also along with that comes the progression, the actual, you know, the physicality of the tricks and everything of that nature has just spiraled out of control into the stratosphere. It's places I thought it would never go. And everybody is good now is the thing.
Mm.
There are no people who just win a competition then you never see again. Everybody is good.
Yeah. And what do you attribute like the rise in talent and the rise of like the advancement of these tricks to? Are athletes just training and preparing better, or is it more people being passionate about the sport at a younger age, or what do you think?
I think it's a bit of both of those things, but I also think it's the technologies that have been developed. So they have these giant airbags now, you know, 150 foot long landing airbags that simulation the exact inclination of how you would land on skis on a jump into plastic. And it's soft, so you fall and you can land on your head and you'll be fine, or you probably won't be fine. You know what I'm saying? You won't die. And they have water ramps. They have trampolines. They have these new technologies in China, contraptions that you would think up in your dream.
Right.
But they have all these different new facilities that you can use. And I think that is what can attribute this rapid, massive progression within the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. What, have you used any of those sort of new training devices like that?
Yeah, I've used the airbag many times, and I'm actually going to use it in next week. I'll be in Austria and I'll be using it for 3 days before we have a training camp, on snow training camp after that. So yeah. And then, so I've been using it since for the past 4 years, later stage of my career. And think about when kids get their hands on it when they're 7 years old, 8 years old.
Right. You could try anything. Yeah.
And they do. People learn so quickly, especially kids now, and they're so good.
Yeah. Are any of these devices controversial at all? Like, is there any like restriction or regulation in terms of how you can train or like what you can do in that sense?
That's a really good question, Mason. A lot of ex-professional skiers kind of hate on it.
Yeah.
Oh, you learned it with an airbag. It's not really that, because it almost is like a cheat code.
Yeah.
It is that beneficial that it could take you from, I don't know, maybe one of the top 20 guys to the top 5 guys in a summer if you did it every day.
Yeah.
And so it is controversial. People don't necessarily love it. Myself, I'm kind of on both sides of it, because I have used it and it has really helped me, but it also, I don't really look at it as a cheat code. I think it's kind of like Lance Armstrong gets in trouble for doping, but everyone's doping.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's also pretty common. You see across all sports that old heads definitely get a little salty with the just accessibility and sort of expansion that the sport offers all the younger athletes. It's just a different time. Obviously, there's different technological advancements. The culture is different. The climate's just all of these things are, it's just a new generation.
Exactly. I mean, who's going to win, Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Yeah, no, very true. Speaking of sort of pushing the boundaries like further than ever before, what is the craziest trick, or like what's known as the craziest trick right now? I think I read that you actually like set the record for a new trick or something, or like did something that had never been done before. How do those sort of things work in the community?
The new hot trick right now is a double cork 1620 in half pipe skiing.
Right.
And there are 3 guys in the sport that can do it, myself included. We can do it both ways, to the right and to the left. That's Nico, Brendan McKay, and myself. Nico's the only one to have ever done it in competition. New hot thing in pipe skiing. And if you're an aspiring pipe skier, I would say learn that. You're be using it quite a bit. And as far as slope style goes, or big air, we're starting to see quad flips. So 4 flips and quad 1800s. So 4 flips and 5 revolutions around your slope.
Holy shit. Which is
absolutely mind-blowing. A friend sent a video to me the other day on Instagram, and I was thinking to myself, wow, he did that way too easily.
Yeah.
Definitely the pinnacle, I would say, or as far as degree of difficulty goes, that is probably the highest.
And you mostly perform in the pipe rather than slope skiing, right?
Yeah, as far as competitions go, I only ski in the pipe, and you kind of need to specialize these days, whether it's in half pipe, slope style, or big air, disciplines of free ride skiing. And there's only one guy that's really doing it right now, and his name's Burke Rude. He won the Olympics for big air this past season.
Wow, that makes sense. I mean, to really just focus your energy and attention on sort of one of these mediums as opposed to mixing and matching.
You have to be a specialist because everybody is so good. There are only a few specimens that have ever done it throughout the history of our sport.
Yeah.
But as the sport progresses, it gets slimmer and slimmer. And Burke is really the only one I can think of.
How are you thinking about your career now, I guess, like being in your late 20s, being a pro for 10 plus years, like sort of in this next decade of your career? Obviously, athletes do have a sort of a time span to these careers that like most other professions don't. Is that something that you're conscious of or think about, or are you much more focused on just remaining in the present and sort of day to day?
I think a little bit of both. I am trying to remain in the present, and I am taking it season by season.
Mm-hmm.
We'll ask, what are you going to do? How do you feel about moving forward? And I say, if I feel that I can still win, and if I feel healthy and still in love, then for sure you're going to see me competing. And yeah, it's just, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think also to what we've been saying with just the advancements in technology and even things you see like LeBron or Tom Brady or like these guys going well into their late 30s, early 40s. I think there's really no, you know, no precedent for how old or young you can be to really compete these days.
Yeah. Like we were talking about earlier, I think you're 100% right. But like we were talking about earlier, it's, I think a lot of it is upstairs.
Mm.
95%.
Mm.
And you can do whatever you tell yourself you can do.
Yeah. I think the brain is underratedly powerful in terms of what it can really convince us and make us believe. And I think definitely a lot of people need to really learn to tap into that more instead of just accepting and like residing over with what we feel our circumstances are.
Absolutely. And right now, I think it even gives me a little bit more confidence because I see, okay, I have my body now.
Mm-hmm.
Use the shit out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Treat it like a temple and use the shit out of it to get the most you possibly can out of this, how I look at my career now, out of this legacy. How do you make it? How do you transform this into a beautiful legacy? Something that kids, parents, family members, friends will look back on and say, that was a job well done. You did it with class and respect.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're an anomaly in the sport in terms of the mental preparation that you do? Or is this really popular like across most athletes in the sport, would you say?
It's hard to say completely because I haven't spoken to everybody, but just based on my personal team of half pipe skiing, the men and the women, I haven't seen it as much as you would think. I would hope that we would see it more. Maybe 3 out of 10 people are doing it, if I could guess.
Mm. And why do you think they might be resistant towards it? Just like not really believing it in or like focused on other things or what?
Maybe they don't know it exists or maybe they don't believe it works. Maybe they're young. Maybe they haven't seen it unfold all the hard work in front of themselves yet.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a good example. If I went golfing with Tiger Woods and he told me to do something, I would do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I went into the studio with you,
yeah,
and you told me how these stitches work better than those stitches, I would use these stitches.
Yeah.
But you can lead a horse to the water, you can't make a drink, right?
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense, and something that we talk about with mental health all the time is like, since it's invisible and it's sort of this like, you know, such an internal personal thing, it's like so hard for people to really understand it until they've actually personally experienced it or maybe see a loved one going through it. And then it's like, oh, like now I get it. Now I know that you can't just get over your depression, or now I know that you actually can't get out of the car because you're so anxious, right? That it's actually a real thing and not just this made up thing that we can get over. And I feel like everyone will encounter that eventually, but until they do, obviously it's a lot harder to really understand how real of a thing it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And succeeding is not easy, right? Like, people are scared sometimes of success, myself included sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you know you're built for something so great, or you think you're built for something so great, and then maybe you don't think you can live up to that when you get there, but surely anybody can, as long as you believe in yourself to be that person.
No, 100%. How many Olympics have you competed in now?
I've competed in 2 Olympics. I've gone for 3. So the first one that I went for was in 2014. They took 4 spots and I was the 5th man.
And then 18 and 22?
18, second place, 22, third place.
What were those experiences like?
They were incredible. Absolutely incredible. It was the most nervous I've ever been, hands down. I thought I was going to wake up. I was dry heaving. So nervous that I have no energy in my legs. It was a weird feeling.
Was that the first time in 18 or also in 22?
I felt it in 22, but I definitely felt it more so in 18. Yeah. I woke up morning. That is by far the most nervous I've ever been in my entire existence.
What were the biggest things that you learned in 18 that you took with you in 22?
I learned in 22, it's good to be very immersed in the team. Stay with the team as much as you can. So, like, stay with your teammates and be there. Don't be texting your girlfriend. Don't be texting your mom, your dad, whatever. So maybe some people do, but not me. I'm not like that. I'm very much so, hey, I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm right here. And in 2022, we embodied that completely. We were 100%, the three of us, Burke Irving, David Wise, and myself, we rolled as a crew. We were called the Good Vibes Crew.
I love that. It's so interesting, even just hearing you say team. Obviously, people do see it as an individual sport, even though you are representing the country. How does that sort of work mentally or with a group, right? Like, is there that sort of competitiveness? Obviously, everyone wants to win, but how do you balance, like, competing alone and being on a team at the same time?
Yeah, like you said, it's an individual sport, but my theory is that what we do is so dangerous that you really want no ill will towards anyone. And that's surely the case for myself. All of my teammates, all my friends, I want them to do well. I just want to do better. That's all.
Yeah.
And better isn't necessarily against them. Sometimes better is against yourself doing what you didn't think was possible and now is through a run.
That's not too much to ask, right?
No, we're all friends. At the top of the pipe, we are rooting for everyone. I remember a good story is this 2022 Olympics. The first person to drop in was Noah Bowman, I believe. And he's getting ready for his first run. He's walking out and the whole upstairs, every single competitor, Noah, Noah. It was electric.
That's sick.
It was electric. And I remember thinking in that moment, these are my family members. I don't care who wins. Let's go. I think that's a cool way to look at it. And it's pretty rare, I would say, comparatively to other sports.
Yeah. Do you socialize a lot with the athletes from other countries? Like are people picking each other's brain, like being in a room with the best in the world? Or is there sort of seclusion between different nations?
Surely some people seclude themselves.
Yeah.
But myself, I'm like a sponge. I'm going all over the place asking Canadians, hey, you know, we're all friends now. I've been on the tour with them for 10 years plus. So I'm like, hey, what do you guys think? Or how do you think about going switch left, that switch on natural? Or how do you feel this takeoff works? And they'll give you their honest opinion. And when they ask me, I give them my honest opinion. Like, hey, I think you should lift a little bit more, then go in for the grab, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a special thing because it's a win-win for everybody.
Totally. And I feel like it's such a healthy level of humility of, like, you know, we're all in here. We all work our asses off. We all take the same risk every single day, like with our lives. You know, how amazing of an opportunity is it to be in a room with everyone is the best in the world at one thing? Like, we can all really learn from each other. Like you say, like, it's a win-win. Or like anyone in any field, to be in a room with all of the best in the world is like such a special opportunity that it seems silly to not, like, you know, have some vulnerability with, like, the people across from you.
Absolutely. I mean, I think where I got it from, and this wasn't me implementing at the beginning, it's always kind of been like this, but this guy, Marcelo Garcia, he's a 9-time world champion jiu-jitsu fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And he would post on his website the craziest new maneuvers he had learned or done. And all of his competitors would be watching, or someone asked him, a reporter asked him, hey, all your competitors are going to be watching your site and they're going to know the moves that you're planning out to do on them. And Marcelo responds, yeah, but they're in my world now. And I thought, it's just brilliant. Like, that is so brilliant.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. What are your biggest hobbies outside skiing, would you say?
My biggest hobbies outside of skiing, I'm a sportsman. I don't know. I just love sports. So I play a lot of pickleball. I absolutely love it.
Love pickle.
Biking, jumping on the trampoline, tennis, running, mountain biking, road cycling, literally anything involving sports, I do it.
How's your pickle game?
My pickle game is strong.
Aspen's building a very strong pickle community, I'd say.
They are. It's the most hostile place in the Picking County.
We end every episode with the same two questions, which I'll ask you. The first one is, who would you nominate to come on our show? Someone who's been a really good role model for you or who has a very inspirational mental health journey that you look up to, whether you know them or not, who would it be?
Anybody?
Yeah, anybody.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Why?
I think he just embodies the quintessential athlete, and it's admirable.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And lastly, Alex, what makes you mad happy?
What makes me mad is when I'm not on time. What makes me happy is when I complete everything on the list.
Love that, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, it's so awesome to hear about the ways that you've really taken care of your mental health and incorporated into your career. And my favorite part is that you've seen results and that it really has made you, you know, a better person, a better athlete, and much better for it. So we'll be rooting for you. And thanks so much for being a friend of the brand and for coming on the show.
You rock, man. You're a great interviewer. You asked some really solid questions, and I appreciate your authenticity. So I'm happy to be involved with the brand. You guys crush it. Let's have some fun.
Thank you, brother. Talk soon.
All the best.
Thank you guys so much for listening and supporting the show. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to your podcast. Happy almost Thanksgiving. We have an early episode coming next week. We're going to be releasing an episode with a very special guest on Monday. And then we will take Thursday off as we all sort of spend time with our families and take some time off. So definitely keep your eyes peeled for that early episode next week on Monday. Otherwise, have a great weekend, and we'll be back to our regularly scheduled program on Thursdays after that. Thanks, y'all. Peace. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.